found on page 1177. It's Romans 1, verse 18 through 25. The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness, since they may not be known about God since what may be known about God is plain to them, because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power, and his divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. For although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God nor gave thanks to him. But their thinking became futile, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like mortal man and birds and animals and reptiles. Therefore, God gave them over in the sinful desires of their hearts to sexual impurity for the degrading of their bodies with one another. They exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshipped and served God and served created things rather than the Creator, who is forever praised. Amen.
For several weeks now, we've been talking about power. God has absolute and supreme power over all things. He created this world with his command. Out of nothing, this world came to be. But God also gave power to us, those who bear his image. So he gave us the capacities to speak and write, to plan, to design, to refine, to build, to test, countless other ways to be creative with creation, to develop and unfold all the potentials that he put into this amazing world. Human power is a capacity to make an impact on the world around us. We do this through our families and through our work, in our relationships and in our achievements. I think it's safe to say that few people have had greater tangible impact in our modern world than Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs, as many of you know, co-founded Apple Computers in the 70s and then Pixar Animation Studios in the late 80s. In the past two decades, no one else has been able to merge technology with aesthetics like these two organizations. Apple's technological devices are a delight to use, and Pixar's compelling stories are a delight to take in. Apple's products are meant to be empowering to those who use them. And while they have proven to be kind of addictive sometimes, right? Steve Jobs knew how to use technology without it using him. He strictly limited his children's time and access to technology. After the first iPad came out, he was quoted for saying, or he was interviewed, and they asked him if his children like the iPad. He said, "I don't let them touch the iPad." He knew the limits, and he saw what these things did to people. He would not let gadgets control his life or the lives of anyone in his family. But there was something else that seemed to control his life. It was food. Walter Isaacson's authorized biography revealed that Steve Jobs was obsessed with food. He began exploring alternative diets in connection with Eastern spirituality already when he was a teenager. His raw food diets, vegetarian or vegan, gave him a great amount of energy and control. He just had an amazing amount of energy and enthusiasm. But it became problematic when he started refusing to eat meals prepared by famous chefs. And he storms out of a restaurant when something's not made quite to his exact taste. Or he started skipping meals with his family when things weren't quite right. What began as a positive focus on his health led to nothing short of disordered eating. And Isaacson says Jobs had an eating disorder. He doesn't mince words about it. In October of 2003, during a routine scan, Jobs' doctor found that he had pancreatic cancer. Yet the initial biopsy called for celebration. His specific cancer was rare. It was not aggressive. It was a very treatable version of cancer as long as the pancreas was surgically removed fairly soon after detection. But Steve Jobs refused to have the surgery, preferring to try different diets and natural remedies. For 9 months, his friends and his family and his doctors pleaded with him just to have this surgery until he finally did. But during the surgery, it was discovered that his cancer had spread to the liver. He battled cancer for 8 more years before his death in 2011. In Christian terms, food had become his idol, his supreme ambition, his object of faith, and in the end, it got the best of him. In the ancient world, the first audience that the Bible was written to, people saw divine power kind of embodied in things of creation. So for example, fertility and vitality and life, well, a young bull calf really just exemplified that. And so to kind of capture God of object, people made a statue of a calf. And there was a ceremony they went through to fill that calf with the spirit of this deity, false god they worshiped. Other sorts of statues were crafted out of stone or wood. So the very basic level, an idol making is using human power, human creativity, to build something that's false. To direct our attention, place our hopes in something that is false. Because the true God who provides life is not bound up in the statue of a cow. The deity that watches over our coming and going is not captured by a sculpture of a bird. Idolatry is when we serve anything else other than God as the ultimate. We can turn other things into life, or we can turn other things in life into idols. If there's something in life that you just cannot lose, if you absolutely cannot live without something, chances are it's become an idol. If there's something you're not willing to loosen your grip on in order to serve Jesus Christ, you have someone or something you desire more than God. You have an idol. For some people, academic achievement is an idol. Getting awesome grades is where you will find your security and your significance, where you're going to make a name for yourself. This is what literally means the world to you. And so you work hard at it and things go well, but if grades are more important than other things, you might start compromising your integrity. You might start cheating just to make sure you've got that competitive edge and that high standard. You might shrug off friends in order to study, even when you're already well prepared and you've got the material down. You will probably find yourself using people in order to help you with your grades rather than caring for them, even if they're not so have quite the high IQ that you would want in a friend. You hang all your hopes on getting into this certain college, and if you don't, you think your life might as well just be over then and there. What begins as a good thing takes over more and more than it ever should. It ends up consuming you. Ends up being much more than it should be. Like food for Steve Jobs, our idols today often start out as good things that are spoiled when we make them ultimate. In his book called Playing God, Andy Crouch says the following things about idolatry. He says, idolatry is a biblical name for the human capacity for creative power run amok. In idolatry, our capacity for making something of the world is misdirected. An idol is a special kind of human creation. It advances a claim about ultimate nature of reality that is very mistaken. Since the Creator God is the ultimate meaning of the world, an idol is a misrepresentation of a false God. Romans chapter 1 tells us that the fundamental problem with the human heart is that we pledge our ultimate allegiance to something other than God. We treasure something or someone more than we value God. We essentially create a substitute object for worship and for affection. Romans uses the words exchange. We exchange the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like mortal man and birds and animals and reptiles. We have taken what is useful in life, what has a purpose, and given it an ultimate place, and therefore spoiled it. This is what an idol is. Why are they so seductive? Why are idols so seductive? I think it is because these substitutes are good in some ways. Any good thing in life that you turn into an ultimate thing starts out something that's worth your attention, something that's worth your love and your affection. They're seductive also because of what we read in Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1, verse 21. That our default mode as human beings, if you will, is to love that darkness, love that misplaced love and affection, to love and to try to make glorious things of creation instead of the Creator. This is just our natural course. If we just follow what seems instinctive, we'll always honor something in this world above the maker of this world. Jesus said that we're sinners not because we're victims of darkness, but because we're lovers of the darkness. John 3, verse 19, light has come into the world, and the people love the darkness rather than light. Darkness often feels safer. It's manageable. It's something we can control. It's something that we can set the terms and limits on. Our idols are things that we create, things that we can take pride in, things that we can glory in. Idols are so seductive because they begin as good things. They're part of culture, they're part of what we do, but they're human power misdirected, run amok. And it seems so powerful to make an idol and then be able to bid and control it. It seems so empowering to have a God at your beck and command. But ultimately, it comes back to undermine us, to undo us. Idols are seductive. Much way like an addiction is seductive. Perhaps a painkiller that's meant to ease pain after an injury or an accident becomes addictive, and you start using it beyond the scope and the bounds that it's meant to play, and you become addicted. And it feels so exhilarating. It gives you energy and life, and you feel like you could conquer the world. But the more it gives, the more it takes. The more you get, the more you crave. Our idols, like our addictions, don't satisfy, but they set us up for ongoing consumption. Change to this. So, what's the connection between idolatry and injustice? These are the two prime sins in the Bible, and this is what comes through here in Romans chapter 1, that both we've done wickedness before God, we've done wickedness before one another, but that's connected with our exchanging the glory of God for idols, for exchanging creator for creation. What's the connection there? Of course, primarily between us and God, we're worshiping something that's false. We have to minimize God in order to maximize something in creation. We have to make God smaller in order to make our achievements bigger. In order to make an idol ultimate, you have to put God in some kind of place, some kind of box, some kind of limitation in your life. And that's an injustice. That's a wickedness before God himself. That's a slap in the face of our Creator and our Redeemer. But injustice also goes towards one another, because when we lose sight of who God is, we lose our perspective of who the Creator and His glory and His power and His righteousness. When that's not what we treasure, when that's not what we long for and hunger for, we also start losing sight of God's true image, His image bearers, in other people. We start using each other. We start abusing each other. We undermine the dignity of God's fellow image bearers. And dignity is a two-way street. If we don't have dignity for other human beings, that means we won't honor the ways that they are created as image bearers, the power they have to make much of the world. We will limit them. We will seek to overpower them. We won't serve them, but we will subdue other people, turning them into tools and ultimately dehumanizing them. But if other people are your idol, then we can also fall off on the other side of the road with dignity, and that is we fail to see justice be done when there is reason for punishment. We treat someone as if, well, they just can't help it. They're just doing this wrong, and we'll just let them get away with all their heinous crimes. Being passive, pretending someone doesn't have the dignity of God to do right and wrong, to make those kind of choices. We just let them walk all over people. Your idol might be people-pleasing, and that means you don't have the guts to ever confront someone about a way they are wronging you or another person. You have no ability to sharpen them or speak truth into their lives. You're just their tool. They're your idol, and you are subservient to them, flattering them and just giving them whatever they want. But if you're a parent and your idol is the accomplishments of your children, trying to make up perhaps for your own lack of accomplishments or your own insecurities, then you won't honor perhaps the unique characteristics that God has given your child. You're going to shape them and push them into and squeeze them into the mold that you want them to be in. And you'll exacerbate your children. They can't live up to being your God. They can't survive and exist under that kind of pressure, and they will buckle. Idol is anything that we replace as the in the place of the one true God for our worship, for our ultimate place of meaning and significance. Idols are so seductive because they're good things gone bad. They're good parts of creation that we make ultimate, that we neglect the boundaries of, and they end up getting the best of us. Idolatry violates our relationship with God and our relationship with each other. What is God's answer to all this? By making idols, we create a substitute. We substitute something for in creation for the Creator, but God's answer is also a substitute. He substituted His Son, Jesus Christ, for us. Later on in Romans chapter 5, Apostle Paul writes, "While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. While we were still following idols, Christ came and He placed Himself on the cross as the best and ultimate and perfect image bearer of God. He followed God's will completely. He embodied God's dignity perfectly. And He is a sacrifice that atones for our sin. Now, Jesus Christ made that effectual. He made that effective in our lives. He didn't simply die on the cross with the possibility that we could be saved from idolatry. He died on the cross in order to save us from idolatry. 1 Corinthians 3, verse 18 says this, "Do not deceive yourselves. If any one of you thinks he is wise by the standards of this age, he should become a fool so that he may become wise. For the wisdom of this world is foolishness in God's sight, as it is written, He catches the wise in their craftiness. And then again, the Lord knows that the thoughts of the wise are futile." He interrupts people in their idolatries. He catches people right in their acts. And then He gives us a new heart and a new mind. He renews our minds. He shows us true glory by the amazing work of Jesus Christ on the cross. His glory is revealed and His light penetrates through our darkness. He makes blind eyes see. He has the power to break through to our self-deception. We who with unveiled faces all reflect the Lord's glory, we are being transformed into His likeness with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit. Jesus Christ is redeeming us by giving us new eyes for the true God, the triune God, true beauty, tuning our receptors to what righteousness is, what the holiness of God looks like. Jesus told parables about what the kingdom is like. And one of the things that the kingdom is like is it's like a man who found a treasure in a field and he sold everything else he had in order to buy that field, to have that treasure. God calls us to get rid of all other idols so we can treasure Christ and behold Him with our eyes and our minds, to glory in His love and His affection, His beauty, and just to take it in and to revel in awe in His salvation. This is God's answer to our idolatry. This is God's answer to when we make things in creation ultimate. When they get the best of us, God meets us in the midst of it. He connects us at our low point and shows us Jesus and shows us what a true God looks like, a true God that doesn't consume us, doesn't wear us out, doesn't give us a little promise only to have cravings upon cravings upon cravings. This is a God that satisfies us with Christ's satisfactory death on our behalf on the cross, with Christ's resurrection to new life, that begins new creation. Idols have a seductive power, but that power is no match for the power of Jesus Christ.